Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is National Council of Farmer Cooperatives leader Chuck Connor, who joins us to recap the news of the week and take a look at the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Food and Drug Administration leaders announced some changes to the agency's plans to strengthen its food safety oversight. A proposal rolled out in January was met with criticism both inside and outside the FDA for its lack of a solid structure and maintaining the problem of food issues being isolated within the agency. FDA leaders say they've worked to clarify the responsibilities of the new Deputy Commissioner for Human Foods, which meant updating organizational flowcharts for that wing of the FDA, as well as its Office of Regulatory Affairs. The reorganization plan is expected to be finalized this fall. The Department of Agriculture rolled out the initial wave of Inflation Reduction Act funding to increase the availability of domestic biofuels. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack said 59 projects in 15 states will receive $25 million to support gas stations and distribution facilities through a program that funds infrastructure for biofuel blending. Next month, USDA plans to start accepting applications for $450 million in grants, which will be distributed through $90 million quarterly allotments. And finally, the Environmental Protection Agency is once again working to define what federal law considers to be a water of the United States. EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers asked a federal court this week to give it until September 1st to incorporate the May Supreme Court's Sackett decision into its regulatory framework. Among other things, the news means EPA plans to change its existing rule rather than starting from scratch on new language. Either approach would have been closely watched by the agricultural and environmental communities. Chuck Connor has been at the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives since 2009, after spending much of the George W. Bush administration at USDA. In that time, WOTUS has regularly been at the top of the farm policy agenda, so we started our conversation by asking him, is September 1st the end of the WOTUS saga or the start of a new chapter?
Well, Spencer, as you know, this WOTUS debate has been going on for many, many years, even decades. And so when Rod Snyder, spoke to us and said, they're continuing to plow forward and, in fact, want to have good progress by September 1st, I thought that was noteworthy. One option here when you get a major setback on a final rule like this is to just sort of never shut down, but certainly defer for a lengthy amount of time. And it's clear that EPA is not deferring here, that they're going to try and, in his words, sort of surgically amend that final rule in some way that meets the court's muster and try and go forward very, very quickly. I'm still suspicious that on September 1st or thereabouts, we're probably going to have some concerns with the direction they're headed.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the fact, you mentioned these the surgical changes that that EPA has mentioned. What do you make of the fact that they opted to make those changes to existing rulemaking rather than starting from scratch, kind of post-SCOTUS ruling?
I think they're under a lot of pressure here from both sides. Obviously, ag has been fighting this rule for a very, very long time. You have to acknowledge, though, on the other side, there are pressures who have been wanting this rule finished in a favorable way for a very, very long time as well. And so they're trying to balance those interests on their side of the equation, who are really sort of looking at this as the maybe the real chance to get, strong, if not over the top, sort of wetland protections here that if they miss this window, they don't see another window for a while. And I get that. At the same time, too, we've got to have reasonable, responsible, regulation here that enables us to continue to farm, continue to farm and irrigate and do all the things that we feel like this rule has interfered with in the past.
Before we shift our conversation of the Farm Bill, I want to just acknowledge the fact that NCFC had had a number of folks in town for a fly-in this week, meetings on the Hill with the Biden administration. I wonder, the gatherings that you sat in on, what was the one thing that jumped out most at you from the conversations that that your members had with government officials this week?
I think probably the biggest message that we were trying to convey, and probably the biggest message that we heard coming back, you know, with this farm bill really does need to get done, Spencer. And, you know, we're going to argue over details, and we've all got, you know, policies that we want to see put in place. But at the end of the day, you know, these are risky times. Policy should not be one of those risks, just in terms of the uncertainty of, you know, are we going to have a bill or are we not? And so, you know, our message was remove that risk, get this thing done, move it forward. It doesn't seem, you know, in my long tenure in this business that the differences here are insurmountable. Sit down, work these things out in a bipartisan way, and let's just remove this risk and uncertainty from our producers at this time.
We'll be right back with more from NCFC's Chuck Connor right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Chuck Connor with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives says the upcoming Farm Bill's tight budgetary situation should not keep agricultural priorities from getting into the bill.
Do remember, this is now a $1.5 trillion Farm Bill. You know, that's just a tremendous amount of money. And within that, surely there's the latitude here to, you know, do a few of the what I would call relatively minor by historical standard differences out there that exist, whether it's in reference prices on Title I, whether it's in funding for specialty crop programs, whether it's in, you know, resources available to MAP and FMD, all those kinds of things. Surely within $1.5 trillion, I think with a little bit of flexibility, we can make the changes necessary to maybe not give everybody everything they want, but certainly take care of these priorities and get a good farm bill done.
Mm-hmm. Can you, as the agricultural community, work through the fact that, you know, you say it's now a $1.5 trillion farm bill, the bulk of that spending obviously going toward the nutrition program and the Thrifty Food Plan update to SNAP. Can you, as an agricultural community, maybe work to prioritize the request, knowing that, you know, perhaps if automation funding gets included, maybe MAP and FMD, trade promotion funding does not, or research does not. How do you suggest the agricultural community should get together and prioritize its requests headed into this farm bill process?
Well, first, let me just say, I think those requests are again, by historical standards, pretty limited relative to $1.5 trillion. I mean, you know, we're not talking about tens, hundreds of billions, you know, of dollars here. These are pretty modest programs with pretty modest requests. And again, I just don't see that being insurmountable. I will just tell you one of the things we heard this week, and you know, I don't want to overanalyze, you know, the input we received, but I clearly got a sense of some flexibility here in terms of the staff that are trying to put pen to paper literally as we speak in terms of the allocation of those resources. And I don't want to take that too far and suggest that, you know, old positions have changed or anything of the sort. That is not the case, but just the recognition that this bill has got to be done. And in order to get this done, there's going to have to be some flexibility on the funding side, whether that's in Title I, Title II, or Title IV, and with a little bit of flexibility there, this bill can be finished off and really get done. And again, serve the interests of farmers and you know, the uncertainty hanging over the SNAP program and everything else. We don't need that, and it's unnecessary given what I think are pretty modest differences.
One more question before we let you go on the appropriations process. We're looking at the House and Senate with bills with about a $9 billion gap between them, between the two chambers. How do those two chambers go about reconciling that big of a difference for USDA and FDA funding?
Yeah, that's a great question, Spencer. You know, I'm sounding optimistic on the farm bill because I intend to, but you know, this appropriations process has really got a tough slog ahead of it. And I'm not sure I see a strong pathway towards, you know, getting all of these things done, you know, in terms of separate funding bills. I think we're still going to face some kind of a, you know, an omnibus funding package here at the end of the fiscal year. I think that's going to be a very, very difficult time in Congress, you know, where, you know, tempers are going to flare, and it's our partisanship that has become common today is going to be at its sort of height, if you will. And, you know, again, we just continue to hope that cooler minds prevail and they are able to keep, you know, everything going and pass a, you know, a funding bill that, you know, is more or less similar to, you know, what we've been seeing going forward. And I think if they do that, they will have served the country well. But getting to that point, I think, is going to see some of our most partisan time surface here.
Well, a busy week for the folks at NCFC. And Chuck, we appreciate you stopping by to join us and recap that. Thanks for joining us, Chuck.
Thanks for having me, Spencer.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Jana Rose Schleiss explains why your July 4th cookout might be a little less expensive this year.
With inflation easing its impact on the economy, many familiar favorites at Independence Day celebrations won't cost quite as much this year. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation and its Summer Cookout Report, released this week. This chart includes a few of those price changes, shown in percentages up and down. Some items, like hamburger buns and ground beef, are more expensive than last year. Others are less expensive, like chicken breasts, pork chops, and potato chips. Farm Bureau says consumers are expected to pay just under $68 to host a cookout for 10 or more people. That's down 3% from last year's record highs, but still 14% higher than prices were 2 years ago. Many economic factors are shaping the changes. Beef prices are up because producers have been reducing the size of their herds due to drought and high input costs. Chicken and egg prices are much lower as the industry recovers from last year's wave of high-path avian influenza. For AgriPulse, I'm Jana Rose Schleiss.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales, you're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you, that's who, as your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward, moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to have a panel discussion now on the Farm Bill and some of the crop insurance language within it. Joined for that conversation by Tom Sell with Combus Sell & Associates and Mary Kay Thatcher with Syngenta. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Tom, I want to go to you first because as we look at kind of the Farm Bill process, I want to borrow on your experience as a House staffer helping to write Farm Bills previously. Wondering, based on all the things that have to happen behind the scenes and also considering that we don't have legislation from the House or Senate Ag Committees quite yet, just how Herculean of an effort do you think it would be to actually move a farm bill here yet this year? The phrase on time can be debated in terms of what exactly that means, but how heavy of a lift is that going to be if the committee staff do indeed intend to do so?
They've had their hearings, they've taken all the input, and now they're kind of in this moment where they have to decide, how do we get from point A to point B, and what do we really want to be about? What are the resources that are going to be available, and how do we craft the policy in a sensible way to achieve those goals? you know, where they're put a lot of the passion and the heart and soul of the Farm Bill, the politics that carries the Farm Bill is always the safety net, the farm safety net, Title I, crop insurance, those things. So I think once they have their ideal, they'll be able to bring it, they'll be able to bring it together pretty quickly. I'm optimistic about the process this year. And I have a lot of confidence in the staffers who are doing the work.
Well, based on conversations you're having, you know, on Capitol Hill with folks around town, et cetera, you know, we've got these different sides of the debate, Republicans, Democrats, House and Senate. Are there any issues in particular where you think those different competing interests are especially far apart that are going to need to be resolved?
Yeah, I think there's generally a lot of unity here when you're talking about the farm safety net, the combination of crop insurance and or Title I farm program benefits, ARC and PLC, and how those combine together to provide an adequate safety net for the growers. You know, there are outside things like, you know, the role of conservation and the voluntary incentive-based conservation programs. Obviously, those were infused with a lot of new money during the IRA, and that'll come into play in some ways. But as far as structuring the safety net, there will always be regional and cross-commodity kind of controversies and what are the needs of this particular commodity versus that. But I think the record's pretty straightforward.
So, Mary Kay, let's bring you into the fold here and maybe look at things less from a committee level and more from a full congressional level. And looking at the matter of floor time headed between now and the end of September, end of the year, you know, whatever your particular choice of farm bill deadline might be, a lot of other things that are going to need to move across the congressional calendar. How do you think the farm bill and the floor time debates will end up factoring together?
Well, I think, you know, you've been pretty public that the House is going to do the probes bills the second and third week in July on the floor. So that pretty much takes up that month. They'll be out for the month of August. So that really leaves September, when both the Senate and the House Ag Committee could have time to really mark up a bill. And getting it through both bodies, conference, back through both bodies by October 1st, I just think no chance in the world. So definitely in for some kind of a delay. And then how much delay, I think you can take a really good clue from looking at the ag appropriations bills that passed a couple of weeks ago. You know, the Senate was able to breeze through theirs, but they added 2% more money than was in it last year. The House on the other side struggled mightily because they cut 30%. And then, of course, you're going to have the issues of what kind of fights are we going to have about the SNAP program? Will you have the ultra conservatives continue to say we have to do more work requirements? What kind of a fight does that set up, especially with the Democratic side? I mean, in general, I would say that that's one of the few things that you're going to see a really partisan issue on. Most things are indeed, I think, in agreement.
We'll have more from this week's panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Syngenta's Mary Kay Thatcher says a recent clue from a Senate ag leader is giving her something to watch in the upcoming Farm Bill process.
Well, I think we had a real opening a couple of weeks ago when Chairwoman Stabenow said, hey, there's $15 billion. I know before I've said it absolutely has to stay in conservation. It has to stay focused on climate programs. She sort of has broken that trend and said, okay, I am willing maybe to take that money, make it permanent baseline funding in the Farm Bill. So the real question then is, okay, will she let it out of the conservation title? Will you be able to take at least a few billion and put it into Title I to strengthen that, or Title IV, strengthen crop insurance? How does that negotiation work? But really, in order to strengthen much of anything, you're going to have more money.
So I want to ask a kind of a tangential topic to the Farm Bill here. As we look at across the countryside, a lot of folks throughout the country really in need of some rain, dealing with corn and soybeans that are getting a little bit dry, and wondering, how do you think that impacts the politics of whether or not a Farm Bill can move this year, looking out and seeing, you know, real on-hand results or real on-hand impacts of dry conditions across the country?
Well, every Farm Bill, the safety net gets written as if the current economic situation you're in is going to last for 5 years or 10 years. And of course, it never does. Usually it doesn't last 1 year. But certainly having 50% of the corn and beans in not very good shape right now will make people more urgent, will help bring the message to Congress that a stronger safety net would be great. A stronger safety net might be able to help us avoid future ad hoc disaster assistance payments, et cetera. So I think that will help that conversation along.
Very good. And Tom, I want to wrap up the conversation with you as we talk about that drought that's happening right now across the country. I know you're in touch regularly with folks in the crop insurance industry all over the countryside. And I do wonder, the fact that that drought is taking place, is the existing crop insurance and Farm Bill risk management infrastructure going to end up being sufficient for the losses that producers might face as a result of that drought? Or is it time for Congress to look at the potential for some kind of ad hoc assistance?
Hopefully the rains come across the Midwest. Maybe the good news is, if you want to look for an area that has the best insurance, highest levels of buy-up, most number of choices among various types of policies, you know, revenue insurance, area-based insurance, the Midwest is it. It's kind of the dream that all the other regions would like to be in terms of levels of participation and levels of coverage. Price elections were high this year, so there is robust coverage in the heart of that drought area. I know that provides a lot of assurance and a lot of peace of mind to the producers in that area. Still doesn't make it any less fun to go through, or not lack of fun in that case. But we do have good insurance there. But I do think Mary Kay makes an astute observation. I mean, these kind of current events always do impact the potential outlook for the Farm Bill. And I think maybe that need in the Midwest this year is going to spark some of the conversations, actually provide a little boost to the potential to get this Farm Bill done this year.
Very good. Well, we'll be keeping a close eye on whether or not the Farm Bill is in fact going to be moving this year, as will Tom and Mary Kay. Thanks to the both of you for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Jana Rose Schleiss has a look at a policy change that could have a wide impact across the American West in this week's Map It Out.
Lawmakers are at odds over a Bureau of Land Management plan that would allow conservation leases on acres under the agency's control. This map shows the area administered by BLM, which amounts to one in every 10 acres of the country's total landmass. The proposed rule is creating division because it would allow the agency to issue conservation leases for up to 10 years to protect or restore habitats and ecosystems. Currently, BLM lands are used for grazing, energy production, mining, and recreation. This rule would add conservation to that list. Republicans believe the agency is overstepping congressional authority, requiring the consideration of multiple uses for public lands. Democrats disagree, saying Congress granted the agency the authority to do this through previous legislation directing the agency to manage its lands. Republicans on the House Natural Resources Committee recently moved a bill that would require BLM to withdraw the proposed rule and would ban the agency from issuing similar proposals. But that bill has slim chances in a Democrat-controlled Senate. Noah Wicks dives deeper into the issue in his coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jana Rose Schleiss.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer. Seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House and Senate will not be in session as members take Independence Day recess. Both chambers will be back in Washington the following week. Be sure to tune in next week for a special episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers focusing on mental health in rural America. You can stay up to date with the latest news on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.